Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon, alongside St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Barden Co-Recruitment in partnership with District 4. This podcast will explore how we can transform our communities in the 21st century.
One of the things that I'm really pleased with is that we find that people genuinely want to do the right thing, and more often than not, even when they could claim a reward, they're not actually interested in that. What they're interested in is protecting their communities and making sure that evil people have to account for their actions and that victims get justice. And I think that's a really important positive note to take away.
It's now time. This is the Community Safety Podcast. Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.
Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nixon, and this podcast will explore how we can transform communities in the 21st century. Today's guest is Mark Hallis, OBE. Mark is the chief executive of the charity Crime Stoppers. Mark had an extensive military career with the British Army, and upon leaving the Army, Mark's passion for making communities safer led him to his role at Crime Stoppers. Mark, thank you for agreeing to come on to the Community Safety Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Pleasure to be here.
Why does Crime Stoppers exist?
A great question. It exists to give people a voice. It exists to make sure that people have got the opportunity to do the right thing when they see things happening in their community. And if they can't quite bring themselves, for whatever reason it might be, to talk to the police directly, they know that they can contact us safely, securely, but above all else, anonymously, and pass that information on where it will be treated with the respect it deserves.
I think sometimes there's a bit of blurred lines between, and it's quite clear on your website, you know, we are not the police. A couple of questions really. Is it really anonymous?
Yes, it is absolutely, definitely really anonymous. Whether people contact us online, increasingly so, probably 75% of people contact us online, or whether it's by telephone, the remaining quarter, it is genuinely anonymous. And we do that by lots of various technical means, but in a nutshell, it's we strip out the IP address in the ether before it gets to us if you send in a form online, so we genuinely don't know. And likewise with a phone number, it's a kind of a one-way scramble of the telephone number with no reverse key, so that even if the police were to press me, which they don't, but even if it were to press me, or a judge was for that matter, I can genuinely say, I don't know who provided that information. And I think that's really, really important, because that's our unique selling point. And it's critical that people have got the trust in us 100%.
Trust is so important, isn't it, when you're dealing with such sensitive information? I know obviously Crime Stoppers or other countries have Crime Stoppers, Mark. How are you unique in comparison to those other Crime Stoppers? Say, for example, in like the USA and Australia.
It's interesting, really. We're all kind of variations on the same thing, but do things ever so slightly differently. The basic idea that we all exist to take information from the community who want to pass it safely, securely and anonymously is essentially the same, but we all do it ever so slightly differently. The first one was actually set up in, of all places, Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1976. And imitation being the best form of flattery, when we were looking at setting up, and it was in the aftermath of the tragic death of PC Keith Blakelock, yes, in the Broadwater Farm Riots of 1985. They looked around the world to see what could be done. And we saw what was happening, or rather my predecessors, I'm not that old, nearly, saw that was, you know, what could be done. And so we've taken that idea and run with it. America being a federal system, there's something like 500, 800 little programs all doing a great work in their local communities. But we do it nationally for the whole country, and I think that's really important. So there's the same level of standard, Land's End to John O'Groats.
Cover the whole country, and as you rightly said, you know, everything is just so anonymous, and it's really refreshing. And
Jim, sorry, just to finish off on that, that is a really good point. When we carried out surveys of the people that use us, obviously anonymously, and about 80% of them say the two most important things in our relationship is that we are indeed independent. Most important of all, we're not part of the government, we're not part of the police, we're not part of anybody, or the Home Office for that matter, and that we're a charity. And I think that kind of supports and reinforces what you were already said.
Absolutely. How do you operate, sort of, Mark, on a day-to-day basis? You know, as much as you can tell us, obviously, how does it work?
Yeah, the key beating heart, the jewel in the crown, as they say, of who we are and what we do, is the contact centre. So over half of the staff in the charity are actually in the contact centre, about 55 of them. It's 24/7, 365 days a year. So, you know, peak time, we might have as many as 22, 23 people on. You know, quiet 3 o'clock at night, there might only be two or three people on. And we kind of optimise the shift pattern to meet that demand. They work really hard to answer the calls, take those online forms, assess the information. Has there a crime been committed or potentially? And if the answer is yes, then let's make sure that we send it to the appropriate police force or the National Crime Agency or whatever appropriate partner. And if not, then we won't. And it's as simple as that, really. And the good news is because that's all they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, they've got real professionalism in what they do, and they will take the time to listen to what people have got to say. We're not trying to rush on to the next call like a typical call centre, because we've got one chance to get this right, and it's really important that we make the most of that interaction with that brave member of the community who's stepping up to do the right thing.
So important that when somebody plucks up the courage, and yeah, you can appreciate that there's some people they really are quite concerned, particularly if it's a very serious, sensitive crime that they may be given information about. You can imagine, you know, that the way that they are dealt with and the professionalism is so, so important, isn't it?
The reasons for people contacting us are many and varied, and it could be because it's the kind of place where you just don't talk to the police. You know, we all know there's areas like that. It could be that it's a member of their family. It could be that they fear retaliation or retribution. We're completely non-judgmental. That's really important to get across. We'll just take that information, treat it without fear or favour, and make sure it gets to where it needs to get to.
How quickly does it sort of hit the desk of the various sort of police services and other agencies, Mark? Is it a fairly swift process?
That's a great question. We try and keep up with demand. Obviously, that's quite challenging at times. But we will aim to process it, as quick as reasonably possible and practicable. And we've got somebody assessing all the calls that are coming in each and every day and each and every hour. And again, just to put a sense of context there, every day we will take 2,000 contacts from the public.
Wow.
And we will send about 700 reports to the police. That's nearly a quarter of a million a year. So we're talking large volumes here. And if there's anything that's particularly sensitive, or as we call it, a threat to life, could be movement of weapons, or the clues in the title, it's a threat to life, then we have got the mechanisms to pass that information, you know, in real time to the appropriate police force so they can respond accordingly. Most stuff isn't fast time, so that can go in an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, in accordance with demand. But we make sure that we don't want to get the perfect information, but too late. That's no good to anybody.
Drugs are being moved or guns are being moved, and it's got to be something that's got to be acted upon straight away, you know. And I think, again, it's refreshing that people know when they call up, you know, that they are going to get that level of service and that particular sort of agency or police service is going to be contacted. You're listening to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon. Today we're talking to Mark Hallis about how Crime Stoppers works in the UK. Mark, what is Crime Stoppers sort of mostly known for? You know, talking about sort of some of the, you know, the key sort of cases, etc., that you've been kind of involved in. Can you give us any sort of information around that?
People know, you know, kind of who we are and what we do, that we provide that mechanism of passing information safely, securely and anonymously to the police. But also we run a Most Wanted website, or there's a Most Wanted part of our website, which a lot of police forces use. And that's very successful because people have got, you know, I think a genuine interest in what's happening in their community. So we get a lot of useful information on that we pass to police forces to deal with accordingly. We also do rewards at a lower and a higher level, up to £20,000 and occasionally much higher for very serious crimes like, murders and rapes and so on and so forth. And I suppose one of the ones that really sticks in the mind, very successful recently, was the tragic death of Olivia Pratt-Corbell in Liverpool, I think in August of 2022, where Lord Ashcroft, our founder and chair, an anonymous donor, put up £200,000 for information leading to that would be useful in catching the appropriate people. And the thing that I find about those rewards is we rarely pay out on them, which is a good thing, I suppose, for the finances. but they generate a lot of positive interest in the issue, and they lead to people, you know, having their memories jogged and then responding. And one of the things that I'm really pleased with is that we find that people genuinely want to do the right thing, and more often than not, even when they could claim a reward, they're not actually interested in that. What they're interested in is protecting their communities and making sure that evil people, you know, have to account for their actions, and that victims get justice. And I think that's really important, positive note to take away.
Yeah, I remember with the Liverpool case that you just mentioned, absolutely horrific case. And I remember sort of the outpour, you know, from the country at the time. But it was already, you know, all on record, you know, that doesn't matter what your background, if you had some information around that particular crime, then I'm pretty sure that those individuals did the right thing and came forward. And it's also really refreshing to hear that, you know, a lot of people don't actually do it for the money, because I actually think you're right. You know, when people have that type of information and they want to keep their community safer, I think the last thing on their mind is how much money am I going to get paid?
It's kind of a blessing and a curse, really. I've got so many good news stories, so many fantastic results as a direct result of the brave people who call us or send in an online form. But clearly, I've got to protect their anonymity, so you can't talk about them apart from in general terms. But we have been trying to get to grips with that and actually do the kind of story of one in terms of, in general terms, highlighting the fantastic results that we've been able to achieve.
I regularly used to receive, you know, bits and pieces when I was a police officer, and would act upon those pieces of information that would come through, and normally would be, say, the piece of a jigsaw puzzle that you literally were waiting for, that would kind of give you a much better sort of picture of where the investigation was going. So your organisation, you know, is so invaluable to police officers. I still think there's challenges for you as an organisation when you've got those kind of, you know, hard to reach communities where, you know, I remember myself, you know, you never grass, you know, whether that's to the police or whether it's to Crime Stoppers. How do you overcome that? What are your plans, you know, or what have you done, or what are your plans for the future?
That's two great questions there. If I'll kind of take one at a time, actually, just to digest them. First thing is on that no grassing, no snitching. I think that's a really important point, and I think that needs to be tackled head on. It's not about snitching. It's not about grassing. No. It's about stepping up, standing up to protect your community, you know, to actively report and engage in a way that's got absolutely no comeback on you in any way, shape or form, but will mean that those people who've carried out, in some cases, horrific and heinous crimes are made to account for their actions. So I think there's almost like there's a language issue there. It's not grassing, it's not snitching, it's actually stepping up and protecting your community. On that, the second point, which is the first one you mentioned about hard to reach communities, again, that's a really interesting issue. We are here for everybody. Our focus is on our beneficiaries, on the public. But there are some people that need us more than others. We've carried out survey work, and it's almost a bit like smokers. There's a hardcore of about 20% of people who, for almost any circumstance, won't talk directly to the police. But a lot of those people, I'm really pleased to say, want to do the right thing, and we provide that mechanism in that community. So you're right. It's a bit of a hackneyed phrase, but hard to reach, I think, is a good phrase, because it could be ethnic, it could be geographic, it could be old people, it could be young people. It would be different in different areas. But the key point is that they're hard to reach. It's hard for us as well, probably even harder for the police. So, you know, that's where we need to focus, whether it's social media engagement, whether it's getting some of our great regional managers that we've got around the country, or some of our volunteers to talk to community groups to help get the message out. You're absolutely right. The focus should be on those hard to reach communities. But at the end of the day, we are also here for everybody and anybody.
They don't want to go to the police. And I totally understand that sometimes. But it's good that they still feel confident enough to come to an organisation like Crime Stoppers and still pass on that valuable information. Such a key part to an investigation. You know, whether they are at some point prepared to come up, you know, and actually identify themselves or not, I know it will still help, particularly with very serious investigations, you know, sort of point the senior investigating officer in the right direction.
And it's not just the solving of a crime that might be solved later on. It's the saving of many, many hundreds, thousands of hours of police time. One of my favourites in an area that should remain nameless was a murder that had been committed. And clearly the police officers wanted to get the weapon. And we had somebody who contacted us who said, you need to look in this particular kind of river or canal. Yeah. So we passed that information on, and the police, duly sent out the frogmen. They didn't find it immediately, but clearly someone had eyes on. And about 20 minutes later, we had another call that said, "Not there, you muppets! About 100 yards up the road and up the river and under the bridge." And to cut a very long story short, they went there, recovered the weapon, and that expedited the solving of that murder by many, many weeks and many, many. Hours of police time were saved. So that's just like one example of where speeding up an investigation into a crime can be really useful.
Yeah, I had one when I was in the police where there was a camera involved in quite a serious crime. And this camera had been ripped down off a lamppost. It's one of those ones where they call them dome hawks, where they are sort of temporary cameras. They are put up, you'll probably know them, you put up in areas, just to provide reassurance. And sort of hotspot areas. Anyway, this camera got ripped down, and through Crime Stoppers, we'd done an extensive investigation, couldn't find this camera at all. And then through Crime Stoppers, the information came through exactly where it was, the colour of the bag, et cetera, et cetera. And again, we were able then to obtain some information and some forensic information from that particular camera that led us to the actual offenders. So there again is a great example that, I've been involved in where it's actually led to not only solving the crime, but also, as you said earlier, the confidence in the public that had with us, because we had, it was quite a serious crime involving hate. And the response we got from the community was absolutely brilliant. So there's a great example.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on a bit of a sensitive subject now, Mark, around sort of trust and confidence in the police. We're in a time at the moment, and I'll be honest with you, I'm really pleased I'm not a police officer at the moment, because, unfortunately, one or two bad apples can cause a lot of problems for the police service. And I think, it's at a point in its life at the moment that, the police service across sort of England, Wales, Scotland have probably been at their lowest in terms of trust and confidence. How do you assist with that to try and help rebuild that as an independent sort of charity?
That's a great observation. Again, I think I'll tack it two ways.
Yeah, sure.
First thing is just to say, over the last 10 years, the information that we've received and both sent on to the police has gone up by over 100%, which is quite remarkable. And there are a bunch of reasons for that. More crime in certain areas, better campaigns, more regional managers doing a better job out there. There's also two other important issues. One is the challenges of 101, because we do get a significant minority of people who contact us who have been left waiting for a long time. And I think most, senior police officers, would also agree that whilst 999 is a fantastic service in this country, 101 varies from, good to not so good, depending where you are. But the key new kid on the block, as it were, is trust and confidence in policing. And I think, we've all seen the YouGov surveys. We've all seen the constant sort of headlines over the last couple of years that indicate that it's taken a bit of a battering. Yeah. So, what we've done are a couple of things, really. First thing is we have worked with a lot of police forces now, where the majority of police forces use us to provide their own internal whistleblowing line, like you have at work in a lot of workplaces. So that's one small step. And then I'm really pleased that we've done a pilot for the last 18 months with the Metropolitan Police, where they've been brave enough to shine a light on the issue and set up an anti-corruption and abuse reporting service for the public, which has been very successful, and I'm really hopeful that in not too short order we'll be doing something similar for all of policing. So I suppose in a nutshell, it is a real challenge. It means that in some respects the need for our service is more than ever, but we can also help the police to shine a light on their own challenges by giving the public an opportunity to call out bad behaviour.
You know, Mark, it's only one or two bad apples that can bring the whole reputation of the police service down, and that's exactly what we've seen since, you know, cases like Sarah Everard and other similar cases, unfortunately, which is absolutely horrific. But I just think it's great to hear that you're playing your part, because we do really need to build that trust up again. So I remember being a police officer, you know, it was the proudest moment of my life, particularly when I got my sergeant stripes. And to think now that the way that people perceive the police now in the 21st century is really, really negative. It really does make me feel very, very sad. So how long do you think it will take to get that trust and confidence back? Do you think it's going to take a long, long time?
I think it will take a while. It's a bit like the culture of an organisation. We've all worked in different organisations that have had different cultures. It doesn't just happen overnight. It takes a concerted effort of senior people saying that this is unacceptable. We are going to do the right thing. We are going to make sure that we deal with those bad apples. We're going to make sure that the public's trust and confidence improves. But it will take time for that to be seen to deliver, for it to achieve. But we'll get there. I'm sure we'll get there. I think there is an openness in policing now, and amongst PCCs as well, who are responsible for policing in much of the country, to address these issues, because, you know, the classic Peelian principles, you know, police are the people are the police, is it absolutely has to start. I mean, you said it at the start, it's trust and confidence is really, really important. I think it's one of those things where they'll be judged by their actions, in that when they see people being dealt with appropriately, when there's mechanisms for reporting, where people don't kind of sit on their hands and tolerate, you know, bad behaviour, that, you know, we will reach those sunlit uplands. But I sense that we're a ways away from that yet.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think there's a lot of work to do. It's going to take a while, unfortunately. You're listening to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon. Today we're talking to Mark Hallis, CEO of Crime Stoppers, and we're talking all about Crime Stoppers in the UK. Mark, I just wanted to talk to you about sort of plans for the future, really. Obviously, you know, Crime Stoppers is evolving. Technology is evolving every day. Is there anything else on the line sort of that you're developing at the moment that you can talk about?
Yeah, I think one of the key things is, you mentioned it actually, is technology. Is that clearly we get an awful lot of information, take 250,000 contacts from the public, send 200,000 plus reports to the police. And we have got to get, I think, cleverer and better at, if that's a word, cleverer and better at both receiving that information, triaging it, analysing it, collating it, making sure it gets to the right place, and then being able to look at it afterwards to make sense of what's coming in. Technology, I know there's some buzzwords out there now, AI, machine learning, but let's just call it technology, can help us on that journey. We've not got to be hidebound or slavish to it. The one thing I'll always guarantee is that we'll always have a person in the loop, because I think it's one of those things where, you know, technology can help to an extent, but, you know, the assessment and the Mark 1 eyeball is still incredibly invaluable in assessing information coming in. So I think that, you know, we're in the foothills of that journey, and I'm sure there's more that can be done in that area. Just another couple of small things as well. The Home Office or police forces are working in sort of challenged areas with a sort of clear hold build strategy, which I'm sure that we can play a role with. It's not, you know, it's not just us. It's us working in partnership with the police, with the community, with other charities, community safety partnerships, and so on and so forth, to actually work in those areas to try and build community trust, so that they are better and more places to work where bad behaviour is not tolerated and people have got the confidence to stand up for themselves. I think that's going to be an increasing area to develop in the future. And I'm also really proud of some of the work we do with young people. That's called our Fearless program, okay. A bit of a sub-brand really, which is working with 11 to 17 year olds, not to say, you know, we're Crime Stoppers, you must do this, but it's to have a conversation about crime, you know, what is criminality, you know, sexting, whatever it might be, and to let them know that they're not alone, that there is advice out there, they can trust people, they can talk to people. And let's, you know, kind of be on this journey together. Of course, you know, subliminally, we want to let them know who Crime Stoppers is and what we do. But the main aim is to safeguard them, to kind of protect themselves, you know, for the challenges of this difficult world that we live in now. So I think we've got plenty to be getting on with. And But above all else, we've got to be there for our beneficiaries. The big focus that I'd like to think that I've had a small part in playing, but it's mainly been the great team around me over the last 10 years, is focusing on our beneficiaries. I think maybe a long time ago, we probably focused a little bit too much on the police. Yeah. And I don't say that because the police are not important. They're vital to us. But our raison d'etre, our key reason for being, is the beneficiaries, the people who want to do the right thing, who just can't bring themselves to talk to the police directly. And if we do a great job by them, we'll get better quality information, which we can then send on to the police. So it's a kind of a win-win situation. So I think continuing to focus on our beneficiaries, the public, is the most important thing that we can do in the future.
Engaging young people, number one, like you say, around safety and looking after themselves and their own safeguarding, which I think is really, really important at the moment in the current environment. But also, you know, they're the people that are going to be reporting stuff to you tomorrow. We need to sort of, you know, get Crime Stoppers sort of embedded into them as well. So, you know, whenever they see something, whether it be now or in the future, they know where to go if they're not comfortable approaching the police or another agency. So I think that kind of work that you're doing is twofold and so, so important. So brilliant to see.
And that is the key reason. We used to have the Fearless almost off to one side, completely separate. Yeah. But, you know, we realised exactly what you said, that, you know, they are the Crime Stoppers of the future. And actually, some of them, you know, need us now and need to be aware of who we are and what we do, because, you know, protecting themselves, you know, at that age as well, even more important than any other time, is critical to them.
We've obviously seen over the last few years sort of an erosion of community policing, neighbourhood policing. I think, personally, it's really, really key to the work you're doing and to making those, you know, a good step to making those communities safer. Just interested in your views really around that.
That is a great question. Obviously, I start off by saying I'm strictly apolitical in everything I do. Gotcha. In terms of casting judgment. But you can't deny what you've said, that, you know, community policing is central to an awful lot. There is, I think, a realisation of that and an investment in that. The worry and the concern, obviously, is if difficult choices have to be made in budgets. It seems to have been my observation over the years is that it's one of the first things to be cut, not because it should necessarily be cut, but because it's one of the easiest things to cut. So, you know, I can understand the police officer, you know, understanding the importance of that, and also the reassurance factor that the public get from that. I think for us, and I'm being probably a bit selfish here, it's the need for our service almost grows if that reduces. I'd like to think that there should be lots of both, that we should have a healthy, robust, community activity by the police, but also equally, you know, that should be complemented by the work that we get. I mean, the work that we do really isn't replaced by the police. It's complementary to, because the people who contact us are the people who won't contact the police, if you see what I mean. So it's not either or. We need both.
Absolutely. We should never bring the political angle into it. For me, it's just about, you know, doing the right thing and making sure that, you know, we have good, competent police officers and leaders in communities, you know, that will have good strategies and plans to keep those communities safer. And I just see how Crime Stoppers as well play such a really important part. Having been a neighbourhood sergeant myself, I can see what an integral part you guys play. You talked earlier about your main trustee and the sort of the huge donation that was made. And I just wondered, you know, how people can get involved more with Crime Stoppers, you know, if they do want to be thinking about, you know, helping the charity, you know, whether it's from a, you know, a volunteering point of view or a donation, how can they go about that?
Yeah, the website's always a great, starter for 10 on all of that. There's a bit there specifically on volunteering. We're always, always looking out for volunteers who can, you know, help us understand what the, you know, crime concerns are in a particular community. So I really, really strongly, you know, commend anybody with even a tangential interest to go and have a look at our website on the volunteering community part. And I think there is an opportunity where we talk about, you know, fundraising as well, to sort of get involved in that area too. Cool. I do commend the website. I mean, for, you know, anybody that ever wants to, you know, pass information on, we've got the number that I'm sure everyone knows, 0800 555 111. But if you just Google Crime Stoppers, and very quickly it'll come up there, the Crime Stoppers webpage, with a whole bunch of information regarding how to pass information, activities, articles of interest, and you can kind of follow an awful lot of links there. And also a bit of awareness and prevention. Now, it's not our role only. You know, in terms of taking information, I do think we've got a unique selling point, and we're the only person that actually do that, or the only organisation that does that in the country. But in terms of awareness and prevention, and we all know with crimes like fraud and so on, that not becoming a victim in the first place is more important than trying to resolve it afterwards for obvious reasons. And, I suppose we're a part of a coalition of the willing, together with the police, together with community safety partnerships, together with the government and a whole bunch of other organisations, victim support, citizens' advice, in to try and help provide advice. So we've got advice on there as well to people to help protect themselves.
It is a really informative website. So if you are looking at getting involved or wanting to, make a call and pass on information, obviously, just reiterate, Mark's just given the number 0800 555 111. Have a look at the website. It is really informative, and there's some really good information on there of how you can get involved. Mark, we're coming to the end of the interview. I just wonder if there's anything else you wanted to cover, anything you wanted me to ask you today that I probably haven't, and that you'd want to cover before we finish off.
You've drilled me well. You've asked everything that I think that's needed. I suppose what I'd like to finish on really is just saying a huge thank you to our stoppers out there, to the wonderful, brave people that actually have taken that brave decision. It's an active decision, actually, to not be a bystander, to take an active decision to make things better in your community. And sometimes, it might be close to home. And I just, I cannot overstate how important and what a great job you all do, and how, proud everybody is at Crime Stoppers of the wonderful people in this country who actually do the right thing. And I think, if we all live by that tenet, we'd be in a better place.
Absolutely fantastic. And I think, from my point of view, good leadership is really important with organisations. You've clearly been there 10 plus years. So there's obviously some great leadership and some great people around you doing some amazing things. So, from us as well, thank you for all the work that you guys do.
Thanks a lot, Jim. And I'll make sure that thanks gets passed on to the hardworking people that actually do the job.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on today. I know you're a busy man. I think, anybody listening to this episode will get an awful lot from it. And I'm sure we'll if they have got any information that they are, feel that they need to pass on, then I think they'll have more confidence now to do that. So, thank you for sharing your time.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Community Safety Podcast. If you like the episode, then please follow us, rate and leave us a 5-star review, and tell us what you liked about that particular episode. And we will catch you on the next one.
Alongside support from St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Barden Co Recruitment in partnership with District 4, you have been listening to the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.